the door to this world, having once been opened, we must take care that it does not close again, for after a while I shall hope to start a new series of revelations, though their exact nature is yet unknown to me. Go carefully through what you have. You will have time to arrange the various contributions each under their proper headings, and thus you will have a fairly complete and continuous account of life over here. Hell, the astral plane, the realms of half-belief, of real but narrow belief, and of belief shown forth in a life of good deeds, have all been revealed. Beyond these planes I as yet know nothing, but I do not despair of gaining some knowledge of life in the fifth plane. So henceforth consider me, as I know you will, not as sleeping an age-long sleep to be broken ultimately by the trumpets of Judgment Day, but as a man still much like yourself, but freed at last of the trammels of a body, no longer subject to pain, no longer needing material food or sleep, and therefore as one freed from the drudgery of life, dwelling among pleasant surroundings, with boundless opportunities, not for idle sloth and endless psalm singing, but to study all subjects in which I am interested and the means to pursue those studies far further than any man can do on earth. Consider me able and anxious to help others, and by so doing preparing myself to climb higher and higher from division to division, making new friends and learning new truths day by day as time seems to you. Consider me happy and contented in a measure, glad to have escaped from the material world, but do not think of me as absolutely happy yet. Perfect happiness is a long way off still, and can only be attained by steady effort concentrated by a set and determined will after many ages, during all of which the spirit is undergoing fresh experiences, and learning new truths. Think of me thus, at all times, busy alike with work and recreation. The work is that which will help me to climb upward step by step, the recreation that which on earth I considered as work. So bear my greetings to all who will receive them and come to me regularly week by week, and now goodbye for the present, thanking Mr. K, Mrs. K, and all who have assisted me in this work. J. W. Before I go, tell me what J. B. P. and the officer and A. are doing. H. J. L. The officer is shortly, after a little more training, to go down to the astral plane to help the thousands who are being hurled into the new life they will find there, and badly they will need all the help they can get, cut off thus in the prime of life. But help they will receive. J. B. P. has already gone down again into hell. A. is still struggling to learn the simple lessons of the school where I was so long ago. J. W. Yes, to you it must seem long, and yet as earth reckons time it is only 9 months since you passed over. H. J. L. Yes, but time here counts by experience and not by hours, if indeed one can call it time, and even on earth I think by the time December 31st has arrived not only you, but the whole world, will say, this is the longest year we have ever known, but now goodbye once again. And so we parted. And to and fro since then I have journeyed, and always had a ready welcome, but little of special interest, merely family news and such small talk, though all the time I know J. H. L. was working at various profound subjects. But at length the fatal day came when I sought his aid on behalf of my brother, and that aid was given ungrudgingly. And now my weekly visits are devoted in the main to the astral plane, of which before long I hope to write a fuller account. Part 2. The Officer. Automatic writing in trance state by J. W. Witnessed by Mr. K. Chapter 1. The first letter from the officer. His passing over, for an account of his life on earth. Ch. J. L. 24th of January 1914. P. 14. February 17-1914. I will start by stating a few facts which you must grasp so as to realize what life is like here in hell. Spirits over here fall into the following groups. 1. Spirits of dead men or animals. 2. Spirits who have never been incarnated. 3. Spirits who come from other planes, etc. Of these the discarnate spirits may be divided as follows. 1. Elementals, good, bad, or both good and bad. 2. Vices personified. 3. Evil spirits created by the thoughts of men, for example the devils of our childhood days. Now the elementals are the most numerous, especially on the astral plane, and most of those that are there are bad. The other non-carnate beings are met within the higher spheres, and the mixed ones often take an active interest in world affairs. Some are the guardian spirits who watch over great nations, others over societies, and so forth. This explains the fact that England as a nation has a distinct personality, quite distinct from that of any or all the separate individuals who form it. Now I hope these first remarks will enable you to get some idea of the type of beings other than men we meet here. They are not much in evidence in the set of half-belief, but the higher types, of whom I, as yet, alas, know little, reappear in the higher sets. They include some of the angels and teachers, but many of these were men who, having learnt, returned to teach. You cannot easily divide and classify the various spirits. I will now start an account of my death. I was walking along the Strand when a beastly motorbus knocked me down and ran over me. I should have seen it, only admit I had been having rather a number of glasses of whiskey and was not quite myself. Now the funny part is this: after the accident I got up, felt a little shaken, and, seeing a crowd gathering, decided to hurry on to the office where I was to sign the agreement for that patent. When I reached the door of the office I knocked, but to my surprise my hand seemed to go through. No one answered, so I tried to push open the door, and, next moment I found I had gone clean through. My word! I said, I'm more drunk than I thought. Wonder if I had better go on. However, seeing a flight of stairs, I went up them and knocked at the office door. Same result. Went through it. I found the man waiting at his desk and a clerk at a side table. I took off my hat and bowed, but the ill-mannered swab took no notice. I said, I've come to sign that agreement. But again he did not answer, and next moment, turning to his clerk, said, if that damned fool doesn't come in 10 minutes I shall go off to that other appointment. I'm here, you fool! I shouted, but he took no notice, and in spite of everything I could do he at length got up and, after cursing me roundly for not coming, went out. I swore and cursed too, so at length I went out, saying to myself, he's more drunk than I am. Again I seemed to slip through the door, but as I did so I heard a fiendish chuckle, and, turning round, saw old Billy, a former pal of mine. Why, Billy, I said, thought you were dead. So I am, he replied, and so are you at last, old sport. You're dead at last. I thought we were never going to get you, you damned liar. I'm not dead, I'm quite alive, only rather drunk. Drunk? Squealed Billy. Even when drunk you can't walk through doors, and aren't invisible. Why didn't that fellow see you if you were only drunk? Then suddenly I knew it was true, and immediately I wanted to go in search of my body. We had reached the street, and at that minute Billy saw a nice-looking girl. See that girl? He shouted to me. Yes, I replied, but you need not yell so. You fool, she can't hear us. I'm going after her. What's the use? I asked. She's not that sort. Chapter 2, First Experiences on the Astral Plane. The Drinking Den. Second letter from the officer. He took me away I know not where, but it was into an awful darkness. Soon I was aware of a vast crowd of other spirits. Where am I? I cried to my guide. Where would you like to be? He asked. Whatever place you wish to go to you shall. I want a drink, I cried. Come along, he replied. We have one here who looks after all who thirst. In a moment I was aware of a howling mob, and over them presided a being. How shall I describe him? He most closely resembled a drunken man, low, bestial, sodden with drink, foul in every way. There was nothing grand or majestic about him, nothing of what Milton describes of ruined splendor. The nearest thing you can ever have seen is some drink-sodden wretch thrown out of a pub at closing time. He leered, and we all yelled, drink! Give us drink! Come with me, he seemed to say, but you will have to work first. In a moment we were in a large, low drinking den, somewhere, I should think, in the East End of London. It was crowded with low men and women and even children. Oh, what a lovely smell of gin and whiskey there was. It is true there was rather too much loaded cheap beer, still, one can't be too particular. But when I wanted to get hold of a glass of beer which was standing on the bar, I was quite unable to hold it. The desire for it grew stronger and stronger, and I seemed to contort myself with a kind of mad fury. I looked at the drink guide, and he was laughing and jeering and mocking me. At last he said, "Work, you lazy brute, how can I? Look what the others are doing." Then I noticed that many of the others were twining themselves round the men and women who were drinking. I cannot exactly describe how they did it, but they seemed to be insinuating themselves into their carcasses. Suddenly I saw a man who was already fairly tipsy drop in a kind of drunken stupor. At once a spirit who had been twining round began to fade into him and soon seemed to be absorbed into him. He was gone, and lo! The man staggered to his feet and yelled, "More beer, you dash! I won't say what!" The barmaid gave him some more, but I could see that it was not the drunk man but my spirit companion who was, as it were, shining out of his eyes. He drank and drank and got more and more violent, till at length the chucker out seized him by the shoulder. He at once seized a quart pot and felled the man. The blow was terrific and split the fellow's skull. Then there was pandemonium. Many of the drinkers rushed out shouting murder. With them in some cases went the spirits who had twined themselves round them, but others seemed to cast them off. I noticed for the first time that these spirits were divisible into two groups, those who were obviously men and those who were not. The latter had various forms, all more or less bestial. I cannot describe them. They were foul, misshapen things, not human or animal, sometimes composite, with animal heads and human bodies, some heads only. Some foul monstrosities with no shape or form, things one might see in D.T., but nowhere else. Meanwhile the drunkard who had felled the chucker out stood waving his beer pot. Then I heard a fierce, wild yell of laughter, and saw our guide laughing and cheering. We all began to cheer too, why, I don't know. Then the companion who had taken possession of the drunkard, began to disentangle himself from him as it were. He was out, and lo! The man collapsed in a heap. "He's dead, I suppose," I said to a friend. "It was old Billy." "Oh no, only drunk, but he'll swing for it, I expect, so we shall soon have another to join our merry throng." "But it was not really he that did it."
"Of course not, but who's going to tell the jury that?"
"They'll learn he's had a grudge against the chucker out and has several times sworn to do him in." "Are you going to witness to the truth?" He laughed. And so did the others. Just then a policeman entered, and soon a dozen people were busy explaining what had happened. Several more men in blue entered and picked up the drunken man and carried him out.
"Well done," said the Grand Master of the Ceremonies, as Billy facetiously called him.
"Well, now, you others, go and do likewise." The drinking started again. And after a time I found in some way I could get a sort of satisfaction by twining round a man. It was not exactly drinking, being more akin to the satisfaction one used to get from smelling alcoholic spirits. But it was grand and yet unsatisfactory, a sort of Dead Sea fruit. So we hung round that pub for many a day, and I learned even to take possession. I can't and won't describe how we got possession, but it's something similar to the way in which I am now able to write. You need not fear. I don't wish to do these things now, and if I did, there is a great guardian spirit who stands by you, not to mention your own father-in-law. Now I must give you a rest, as Mr. L. has arranged. Besides, I have told you enough about the drinking den. So rest for half an hour, and we will go one stop further in the next letter. This ends letter 2 by me, the officer. _ Chapter 3. The denizens of the astral plane. Still controlled by the officer spoken. Now I think I had better explain who the drink guide is. He is not an elemental, nor is he the figure conjured up by the thoughts of men. He is created by the lust of all who desire drink, that is to excess. If all the world were to cease to desire strong drink tomorrow, he would gradually fade away. Not at once,
because we over here would be able to sustain him for a little, but as we should no longer be able to gratify, even in the shadowy way I have described, our lust for drink, in time he would fade away for want of sustenance. So, too, with all the lusts we know of. The old idea of the seven deadly sins was not so far out, but there are a jolly sight more than seven. The demons created by the imagination of men fade as the men who have created them, by thinking of them move on, but, unfortunately, they are always being recreated by other men. Some parsons do quite a lot towards peopling hell with devils. While there they torment, as we have been taught to believe they would. Those who have not been taught about them don't see them. The elementals are quite different. They exist of themselves as much as we do. How they originally came into existence I do not know, but you must not suppose they are all bad just because I speak of them as such here. There are blithe, light-hearted spirits who haunt dells and woodland glades, the fairies of our childhood. Innocent children do still occasionally see them, but, as they are laughed at for their pains, they cease to believe in them, and so lose the power. There are many types of elementals, spirits who inhabit the winds, and so forth. I shall for the present deal mainly with the evil ones. But even among them, as among men, there are degrees of wickedness. I believe, too, they are capable of progress, but exactly how I cannot say for certain. Sometimes a dead man continues to take an interest in his family and tries to watch over it. Sometimes he is able to give it premonitions and warnings. But often death warnings are given by elementals who come scenting death. These come hoping to be able to draw some physical substance from the dying person. This naturally leads one to the subject of vampirism, which is fortunately rare, though it does occur, not, however, in the crude form usually related in legend. This, now, has given a glimpse, a rather horrible one, of some of the beings whom we meet here. Thanks awfully for your kindness. I will give you moat information next time. If it revolts your gentle soul, Mrs. K., forgive me, but I have to give it. So goodbye, and thank you. The officer, J. L., took control. Thanks for your kindness, Mr. and Mrs. K., but I consider that what the officer can tell is perhaps almost the most valuable part of all this work. H. J. L. Chapter 4, An Incident in the Life of the Aesir Upon Earth. A vision seen in a bottle of water by J. W. at Mr. K.S. at 7:40 on February 10, 1914. From notes taken down by Mr. K. I see clouds of smoke, a spot of light, large flashes of light, a blaze of it absorbing the whole bottle. Grass, miles of it, burnt up grass, yellow and dry. Great mountains piled high one above the other into the far distance, and some of them ground with snow. We are in a valley between steep mountains, with a stream running down it. Three men come riding up it dressed in khaki soldiers. They are riding up a steep path on one side of the valley. The flash of a gun, a man drops, another flash and the horse of the second man drops. The rider of the wounded horse gets up and seizes the bridle of the horse of the wounded man. The third man, who is unwounded, turns and rides for his life, leaving the other two behind. The unwounded man, who remains, leans down, and, picking up the injured man, places him on the horse which he has captured, and jumps up behind him. Heavy firing all the time, heads appear, some with turbans. One of them hurls a great rock down the side of the hill. The soldier urges his horse forward full gallop, and the rock passes behind him. Another rock rushes past just in front of the horse. More rocks come crashing down, but miss the fugitives. Firing continues. The path goes under the side of an overhanging rock which shelters them, for the boulders leap clean over them and fall crashing into the valley below. They are out of range now. Reach the valley in safety. Here the unwounded man meets the one who ran and hurls his revolver full in his face. The coward falls from his horse stunned. The man who rescued the wounded man is very clearly visible. He is about 40 years old, a sallow face much lined, a moustache and dark hair. He has hard blue eyes and an unpleasant mouth, and a rather hooked nose. He looks strong, but hard and ruthless, He rides on and meets a detachment of troops coming up the valley. They help him to dismount, and put the wounded man on a stretcher. Several officers shake hands with him. The troops advance rapidly. He goes with them. They sweep up the valley. A great cloud of dust blots them out. Can see them again. They are storming the hillside. Boulders are hurtling down a slope. Again the dust blots them out. Once more can see them. They are much higher up. They are storming the crest. The hillsmen are mown down by the rifle fire, and drop like rabbits. Again a great cloud of dust covers the whole picture and blots it from view. Nothing but dust. The bottle of water begins to reappear. That is all. Fourth letter from the officer, written automatically in trance, February 10, 1914, at Mr. K.S. house, 8 p.m. The officer. You must not expect anything very pleasant as yet from me. You want the truth, and you shall have it. It is well that the world should know the truth, and not only the rosy side of it. I told you of the drinking den, and before I go on further I had better describe and explain what the vision you saw means. It shows an incident in my early life. I rescued a man under fire when a cowardly skunk ran away. That was I. You hear nothing but bad about me, still, I had a few sparks of better things. Now to proceed with my story. I need not go through all our life here. Just as we went to a pub, we also went to a bad house. The great guide over lust is a spirit like a woman, but foul beyond compare, loathsome in every way. I will not go into details, but, as we could get a Dead Sea fruit satisfaction at the pub, so we can in like manner satisfy almost all our lusts. Satisfy, did I say? No, just the reverse. That is our punishment. The craving for what we want but cannot really attain. Oh, the hell of it. For all the while we are helping to drag down others. Oh, what fools these mortals are. Do you suppose you can give rein to evil and not suffer and not make others suffer? I think you had better rest for half an hour. Chapter 5, A Seance. Letter from the officer, March 7. After a while I began to find that drink dens bored me a little. Then the dark spirit who acted as my guide said to me, "Shall we go to a seance?" "What for?" I inquired. "Well, much fun can be derived from some of them," he answered. "Nothing else?" I inquired. "Yes, if you are not careful to maintain the supply of semi-material elements which form this body you wear here, you'll find yourself losing it and dropping down to hell." "Am I not in hell now?" "No, you are still on the earth plane. You'd quickly feel the difference if you were in hell, really in hell." "I'll do anything to keep this body going," I cried. "Now explain matters to me. I once went to a seance. I certainly could not account for everything I saw, but put it down to fraud." He replied, "These seances fall into three main divisions, but often there is a good deal of overlapping. 1, genuine ones where the medium is controlled by a good spirit. 2, genuine cases where the medium is controlled by evil spirits like ourselves. 3, fraud. Now, of course, we can't do anything with number 1, and number 3 is useless, but number 2 is different, and often we succeed in leading astray a medium and converting her into number 2. I inquired, "What is it that enables you to get control?" He answered, "If the medium uses her power for her own selfish ends, to advance her own fortunes, etc., then we can get control." "Do you mean that they may not take money?" "Oh no, a medium, just like a parson, has to live. You don't think any the worse of a parson because in time he gets a vicarage with £400 a year. A vicar may become a bishop at £3,000, but he does not cease to be a good priest necessarily by that fact. If, however, a parson, instead of trying to help his fellowmen, devotes his whole time to getting on in position and fortune, you would at once say he was not a good priest. So with mediums, it's the motive, and there is no deceiving us in that. Once the motive becomes low, then comes our chance. What good to ourselves do we gain by doing this sort of work?" I asked. He leered. "First, you gain material elements for this psychic body. Then you gain power." "Power? Doesn't that word make you think?" Isn't it splendid to be able to lead many people by the nose? Above all, and here he led even more villainously than before, we can pay off old scores, and even occasionally obtain a temporary incarnation. Now, isn't that worth striving for? Again to walk the earth knowing all you have learnt here, eh? I seized on the idea, and soon, with a band of other spirits, we congregated in a room where a woman was sitting surrounded by about a dozen men and women. Beside her stood a great spirit of light, the first I had seen, but he was sore beset by a mob of evil spirits. Again and again he hurled us back. But at length one evil spirit obtained control. Then a howl of delight rose from us all, and we rushed round her and began to form a complete ball of spirits round, above, and below her. What are we doing? I asked my evil guide. We are insulating her from the influence of her guardian angel. He cannot penetrate this wall of evil, any more than we can penetrate the wall of good which is around the best mediums. Now watch the spirit who has got to work. The medium began to speak. Turning to a middle-aged woman, she said, I am your sister Sally, and proceeded to give several pieces of evidence. How does he know all these facts? I asked. Easy enough. He's hung round this medium for years, and learnt all sorts of useful information. Now watch him. A man in the room spoke. Can you give me any useful information? I mean something of practical value? I'll ask your brother George. The spirit replied, and then, assuming that character, said, on financial matters I wish to give you a useful hint, Henry. Come here, and I'll whisper it in your ear. He gave him some advice on certain stocks that the man held, and the latter seemed pleased. You'll make a pile of money by that, the spirit added. Is that true? I inquired. Yes, it is, though often we give false advice to ruin our dupes, but sometimes we give genuine information, either so as to lead them on, or else so as to keep them engrossed in earthly matters and so prevent them learning more important spiritual truths. Now watch. The medium approached a young woman. I know what is in your mind, my dear. Yes, accept him. He will make you a good husband. Don't listen to the lies which are told you about him. What is the object of that advice? I asked. My guide replied, the man who has asked her to marry him is a drunken beast, and a blackguard. He'll drag her down, and then we shall get her. Now see this spirit. He was a jovial hooligan on earth. You'll see some fun. Sure enough, a new control came and began to play all manner of tricks, some harmless, others distinctly malicious, but none quite so devilishly cunning as those of the other spirit. He moved things about and threw them across the room, he hit several persons sharp blows on the head, and hid various objects. He even stole articles out of the sitters' pockets without their knowledge. Nearly all these things were done without any visible contact. Finally, he tipped up the table and upset half the audience. Then we departed. The beauty of these manifestations is, said my guide, that they are the only sort of proof that some materialistic beings will accept of the spirit power. Thus many good mediums and controls have to exhibit them, and so we get our insidious messages accepted by the audience on the strength of them. Above all, they wreck the medium and give us power, and often incidentally bring discredit on these seances generally. We don't like genuine, good mediums and spiritualism generally. They teach and warn too much. Then we went away, but soon returned, and in my next I will show the result. From the above you will doubtless see why I am describing these seances, but there are other reasons. All that is put down here is for a reason, it's all planned out, and if you don't at first see the reason, why, be patient, and you will learn. The officer then spoke. He said, I have been down to the very bottommost depth of hell, impelled largely by that intangible thing, a strong personality. Like a burning fire it drives one on the path one has chosen, and for me there was no hope until that path had been trod. The personality made evil by an evil life remains evil after death, and the more probably will it go to the logical conclusion which its evil deeds naturally set up. You say, to know all is to forgive all, and he who has been to the bottom of hell may yet rise to the top, and the knowledge so acquired will be of far more value to himself and the world in general than the lesser knowledge acquired by a feebler soul who did no great evil and very little good. Being asked whether a soul could ever become annihilated by persistent refusal to repent, he said, "It is obvious that a man could not be punished indefinitely for what took place in a finite period.